Welcome to the Starting Messy podcast, where chaos and courage come together to create magic. On this show, we're flipping the script on perfectionism and embracing the messy, imperfect journey of entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Misty Jane, a life and money empowerment coach for people who are obsessed with personal growth. My guests and I are sharing the truth behind what it means to start messy and why it's worth the leap. Because let's be real, all the best stories start with a little chaos. All right, are you tired of just dreaming and ready to start actually doing the damn thing? You and I need to chat. If you're an overthinker with big dreams, it's time to cut out the procrastination and this idea of perfectionism and actually just start taking action. I want to share with you the 4 Steps to Starting Messy workbook, designed to support you in turning your dreams into your reality. Deep dive into figuring out what you really want, pinpoint your blocks, get comfortable with discomfort, and start taking action while staying focused. Head to the bottom of this episode's show notes and snag your free download today. Grab a pen, get comfy, because it's time to take the first steps towards creating the life that you have always wanted. Welcome back to the Starting Messy podcast. I am so excited today to talk to somebody actually outside of the hair industry. This new pivot is bringing a lot more conversations, not just from behind the chair, but in all industries and how people started messy and created success with a little bit of chaos at the beginning. So today I'm talking with my close friend, my client behind the chair, all of the things. She also created an extremely successful State Farm agency of her own. Erin Zabel, welcome to the Starting Messy podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you.
You like my podcast voice? Are you like, who is this person?
I absolutely love it. I'm super impressed. It sounds so professional and, I don't know, polished. I'm super impressed.
This is my 175th episode, I think, of, podcasting in general. So I think I've come a long way. You should listen.
Congratulations. Congratulations. That's like a huge accomplishment. That's a lot. It's a lot of episodes.
Weekly for, I think we're going on 4 years.
Wow. That's amazing. Congratulations. Okay.
My first question for you, Erin, is tell me a little bit about how you – well, tell me a little bit about your business currently, and then we're going to kind of backtrack on how you started. And I want you to brag about yourself like nobody's business, okay?
Oh, that's hard. I'm in the middle of my 9th year as a State Farm agent, which I don't, for anyone who doesn't know, we do insurance. We also do financial services. So I have a securities license. We do retirement planning. So kind of the full realm of financial health for a customer, not just auto and home insurance, which is extremely important, but not everything we do. So my office is in the Greenbrier area of Chesapeake.
In Virginia.
Yes, in the state of Virginia, coastal Virginia. So being in coastal Virginia brings its own little set of challenges because it is, we've got weather here, we've got flooding here, we've got issues. But, we've had a lot of changes over the past almost 9 years, but have really made it work. It's, I have a small group of women that work for me in my office. I have an amazing life insurance specialist, Chris, who has totally changed my life. I have, a lady offsite who helps with billing, and that's really it. And we've, managed to stay in, the top 10 of all agents in Hampton Roads area. Our life insurance and financial services success has put us in the top 10% of 20,000 agents in the country the past 3 years. I'm someone who doesn't think that we need, 10 or 20 people working in a micro business. You can be super successful with a small group that feels as passionate as you do about serving people and giving it their all every day. And I've just been extremely fortunate to have the amazing group I have working for me and to have the success that we've had so far. So hoping to keep
I
it
love that you
going
brought that up because
for
I think a lot of times, and I know even myself, when I think of like some of the goals that I have in my mind, the only way I can obtain them is if I have like a big team.
Right.
And I don't really want a big team. I don't really necessarily want to have, 50 employees or anything like that. And I think that there is this misconception that like to have a successful business, whatever success looks like for the person, let's say a successful larger business, that that brings in lots of money, that it does require a large team. Did you ever feel like that? Like, did you think that you needed to have a large team to kind of get to where you are now?
Oh yeah. I mean, the things have changed a little bit, but initially when I came on, I opened November 1, 2015, there was a lot of, I guess, encouragement from our corporate team to start with at least 4 or 5 employees, which makes sense. I started with a small book of business, but really that only pays your team, doesn't pay you in the beginning. So starting out with a larger group made sense, but and of course people aren't going to work out. And I've really done, it's funny, over the course of this time, I've done things across the board. So I've had 5 full-time people in my office. I've had, 3 part-time and 2 full-time. I've had people working remote. Like I've just kind of done things differently depending on what our needs were and what I felt like was working or not working. And then during COVID, my whole team was at home for 3 months, which was really hard. I was the only one in the office for obvious reasons. But now I just feel like I've figured out the magic sauce for my business, and it really is 2 full-time people in my office, 1 remote person, and 1 person who's in and out depending on my needs. And it's I work, I enjoy being really hands-on. Some people in my chair want to be more CEO like and more like they want to train, and I do plenty of training, but I like to do a lot of the hands-on work myself. So I still write a lot of business myself. That's what energizes me. I don't want to be the CEO who's not doing any of that, because that's really kind of what, and I've watched, you see other people who work for corporate America and they start out doing what they love, hands-on work, and then they get promoted, 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 and then eventually they're just managing everyone and they're not in the business they started out in. They're not doing the work that really energized them. So being my own boss, I can decide what I want to do and not do. And so I feel really confident that we've figured out the structure that works best for our business.
Well, I love that you said essentially you pivoted when things weren't working, right? And I think that a lot of times when people decide that they want to start something, they think that the first choice that they make, they have to stick to forever. And
Totally.
it's such bullshit, right? Like if you're doing
Yes.
something and it doesn't work, like even, I mean, you've been my client for a long time. You've seen a lot of my pivots in my business behind the chair. And like if it's no longer working for me, I change it because at the end of the day, like I want to do my passion and the way that I would like to do it. And I think that people think that when they make a decision, that's their decision forever. And it's like, no, you can switch it up. Like you can change up how you want to do things within your business. I kind of want to go back a little bit and talk about kind of how you started. I want to hear like the messy part. I want to hear what were your fears? What did it look like? Like, did you have people saying, no, don't do that? Did you have people behind your back saying, yes, do it? Like, tell me a little bit about all of the behind the scenes and how you kind of got to where you are now.
Well, it's kind of crazy because, my first job was working on Capitol Hill. I've always been in nonprofit work since I graduated college. I was a poli sci major in English, so I always worked in nonprofit. And which was great because when I was having, I have three kids, so when I was having the babies, it was a lot of flexibility. And I always joke, like I had my first daughter in 2008, and I asked if I could work from home 2 days a week, which in 2008 was just unheard
Unheard
of.
of,
But
yeah.
yeah, but I was like, well, I can do the same things from home. I've been super successful. My boss would be crazy to say no, and he didn't say no. And so it worked out super well for me. And I've always been a huge advocate of women. Like, you've got to advocate for yourself. You got to ask for what you need. And if you're good at your job, or you're doing what they need you to do, they'd be crazy to say no. And so that was kind of a great start, like towards the path that I'm on now. And so I was executive director at the Red Cross for Coastal Virginia. When I got approached about agency, I had never thought about it. I knew nothing about State Farm. I had worked for a nationwide agent in high school, like, cold calling people for quotes. That was the only experience I ever had with insurance. So I was getting burned out. 13 years asking people for money is really hard. I worked in women's health for a long time, trying to make, the local media care about women's health is really challenging. It was a great run. I loved it, but again, after it ran its course for me. So we had a grant at the Red Cross from State Farm, and I just got to know the local leadership, and I got approached by someone who asked me if I'd be interested in like taking a personality test, which, if there's anything your girl can do, it's pass a personality test. So I was like, no problem, I got that. So weirdly though, I guess a lot of people don't pass this personality test, but
Wait,
whatever.
is that
So
how
we
you have
passed.
to start becoming an agent? You have to take a personality test?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, you have to take a, it's not like a, well, they ask you how you would react in certain situations to see if it would be a good fit. It's kind of like auditioning for anything, like, would this be a good fit or not? So that was a go, and then I just got put in a pool, and you have to wait. So, when an opportunity comes up, when someone retires, you interview. So I think it was probably like 8 months. I almost forgot about it. And then finally got the opportunity to interview, and was selected for one of three people to go ahead and take on a book of business. The gentleman was retiring after 44 years or something. So yeah, just kind of got the opportunity. And it's funny, after I had the initial conversation with the corporate gentleman who approached me, he kind of painted this picture for me on what owning an agency would be like. And I went home and I just said to my husband, I'm going to be a State Farm agent. And he, to his credit, he was just like, well, what does that mean? And I kind of described it, and he was like, okay, like whatever.
Sure.
He was like, it sounds awesome. You know what? He really believed in me, which was huge. And then, but again, no real idea what I was getting into. And then, fast forward, you go through, I did 8 months of training and had to get all the licensing, and yeah. And then it's kind of like jumping off a cliff. So you're a corporate employee while you're in training, so you get paid a salary and this and that. And then November 1, 2015, at midnight, I jumped off that cliff. So no more paycheck, no more benefits, no more nothing. And on that November 1, the customers are calling. They need help. They have questions. You have, at that time, State Farm wanted us to sell 100 policies a month, which is a lot, when you're starting out. So I had this very green team. I had my right hand came with me from the Red Cross. I had hired two more people, and then I was lucky enough, I actually brought on the office manager from the previous office, the gentleman who had retired. So I made a really strategic decision there. I paid her instead of paying myself because I knew that was crucial to transitioning relationships. But I don't know how much you want to know, but I'm not going to lie, I cried, probably 3 times a week for a year.
Okay,
I
that
didn't,
part. I want to know that part.
yeah, I cried. I'm not like really a crier, but my, basically, you have to prove yourself. You have to prove yourself for an entire year. And if you hit certain metrics, you are given a permanent contract and then you can fly. You can do whatever you want with your business. But that first year was really, really hard. I had leadership was really tough. You know, they came in every 2 weeks. They were scrutinizing everything, as they should. I mean, it's literally the most golden opportunity anybody could ever be handed. It's an absolutely incredible opportunity. This is the company entrusting me with their customers. I don't own the book of business. They're paying me to service it. They're entrusting me with those families. Looking back on it, you know, it made complete sense. But when you're in it and you're going from making, you know, $72,000 a year to nothing, like zero, and your husband's asking if you're ever going to bring home a paycheck, and you've got 3 children in Montessori, and yeah, that was really hard in the beginning. But I just kept plugging away, and you know, luckily I had a huge network. Of people from my previous career. I'd already lived here for 13 years. Well, not 13 years. How long had I lived here? I don't, it was long enough that I had met people, and people were generous enough to meet with me and let me quote their stuff and talk to them about life insurance. And it was funny though, because I have a real passion for retirement planning and for people starting things like Roth IRAs and mutual fund accounts and being prepared so that you don't work till you're 80. So at my 6 month review with our vice president, which you have to do, it's like a checkpoint. I was number one in the entire country for mutual fund production among first years. So
I'm
that
not
was,
surprised.
well, I was shocked. I was totally shocked. But I'd only written, oops, sorry, I just lost my earbud. Sorry about that. I'd only written like 12 life insurance policies, and this is the 6 month mark, and I needed 60. And my VP, she was wonderful, but she was like, "Congratulations on being number one in the country in this, but you haven't done enough here." And I was like, you know, crap. And so, and then I learned a month later that State Farm was needing to move out of that business, out of the mutual fund business, at least for a period of time. So it was like a lot of whammies at once, but that was actually a gift because I then learned how to focus on life insurance, which to this day I think is the most important thing that we do. And you know, by the end of the year, we had qualified for, it sounds qualified for travel. I mean, it sounds silly. It's an achievement, but what it really means is you're actually going to start getting paid, and you're actually going to start, you know, start maximizing your contract and that kind of thing. But we did it. We got to the, I say we because it's obviously a group effort, but we got to the end and hit all of our goals. And we actually, I was told at the 9 month checkpoint that I would be getting the final contract, which they, you know, don't always do. So that was really great. And I honestly, for the first time in 9 months, I felt like I could take a breath. It was a lot. I mean, you know, you're a business owner, you're a mom, you're a wife, you know. You, but if you want it bad enough, you make it happen. So.
So let's kind of talk about that a little bit because, like, consistency, I think, is what people struggle with the most, and especially when they're trying to be consistent, but they're not seeing results fast enough. And I say fast enough because we, as the person trying to do the thing, give it a timeline that probably doesn't actually exist.
Yes, that is so true.
So if we can throw the timeline out and just stay consistent, you're gonna get to where you want to be. What kept you going during that period of staying consistent, even though it felt like nothing was working?
That was tough. It's interesting in our business because you know, we're 1099, we're paid on commission. So we're a volume business. You know what I mean? You can feel like you've written a lot of business and you just don't really see it necessarily in your paycheck for a while. It's really hard. And I didn't mention too that, you know, when they give you a certain amount of business when you open, which again is really just enough to keep your lights on and pay your staff something while they're trying to build their own business within your business. Before I even opened, I lost a huge chunk. It was one account, and they moved out of, they left the, they went to a different company. And so off the top, I lost like a big amount of money I thought I would have to at least help operate. So that was, I was just trying to like at least catch up to that in the beginning. So I think it was just, I didn't really have a choice. You know what I mean? I was kind of all in on this, and we had, not that I would have ever thought of quitting, but you know, we had put, we'd invested money in this business, you know, and so this is my family, right? And the goal is to, you know, get to a point where I can retire when I want to. I can send, you know, the kids to college. My husband has a great job, but you never know what's going to happen in life. And to be successful in something that you have more control over, that's what I always wanted, to have my own, make my own schedule and, be in control of my own paycheck. Because you know, if you work for a company, you get your 3% raise every year. They decide if you're worthy of a bonus or whatever. And it's not like that in our business. It's strictly based on how hard do you want to work, how much do you want to put into it, how successful do you want to be. So that's really scary in the beginning, because it isn't a set paycheck. It isn't, here's your Christmas bonus. It's just not like that. But once you're in our business, it's once the volume builds over time, and it's really around year probably four, middle of year four, where I started to feel a lot more secure. And then if you know, if you can hang in there, you know, then you know, the success that you had between years one and three, it condenses, right? So by four and a half, you feel good. By five and a half, it feels like 2 years of success, you know? So it just kind of hanging in there and keep plugging away. It sounds really cliche, but that's what
It's true.
works.
And I love that you said that, especially, you know, by like year four, you started actually feeling like secure. So, I mean, you and I have talked about this behind the chair, but, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, but, you know, when I first started this coaching business, I completely quit. Poor Aaron. I completely w quit behind the chair. Aaron was ready to come to my house and kill me.
This can't be done by just anybody. It was awful, awful time.
But I gave myself a year, which is so hilarious to me now, because I gave myself a year to make the coaching business work. In my mind, I was going to have a full-blown, successful, brand new, from scratch business in 1 year. Now, let me tell you, that is not how it works. I am now into year four, and I just now feel like I'm starting. And now, granted, people are going to listen to this. They're going to be like, Missy, what do you mean? You've done great things. Yes, I have. I have done awesome things. I've had amazing clients. I've helped so many people. But behind the scenes, it felt hard because it was very new. And anytime something is new, it's uncomfortable, right? Now I feel like all of the clients I've helped in the past is leading me into this new phase. So moving into year four actually feels like it's all real, where before it almost feels like you're like playing a game that you're just kind of trying to figure out. Like it's like a puzzle. It's like what works, what doesn't work, you know? And I think that's a lot of people's problem, is they want it quick. Right? They want it fast. They want to see results quickly. And sometimes it happens. But let me ask you this. If your 4 years would have happened in year one, would you have been able to handle it?
Oh my gosh. I mean, there are so many. I am grateful for that first year struggle, because I'm not gonna lie, I had never experienced anything like that. I had come out of college, I had gotten a job, you know, first job, you don't make any money, like I'm living in DC, you know, whatever, like silly things like that. But you know, life had come somewhat easily. You know, I met my husband at the end of college. He was a wonderful guy. We got married. I didn't have trouble having children on my own time. Like I hadn't had like struggles really to speak of. And so I guess in some ways that's what gave me the confidence to jump into the, you know, whatever, jump into this new thing, because I just thought, how hard could it be? And I mean, yeah. It was really, 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 really hard. But I am really grateful for that because I appreciate it so much. And they actually identified me at some point. I think I hosted six interns. So that's somebody who's going to be opening their own office. So they send them to your office for 3 weeks. And I thought, I was able, I hope, to give them help, give them like somewhat of a start, just because, once someone knows exactly how you feel. And so, I am grateful for the struggle. And it was a struggle. I mean, the first year was a struggle. Second year felt a little bit better. Third year, I was starting to settle it. And I will say, we had, as much as it didn't feel like financial success in the beginning, we had a lot of results, production success. I mean, my first 3 years, I was identified for leadership. I was asked to speak on my senior VP's council. There was only 15 agents in the entire Eastern market area that served on his council for 2 years. I was being asked to speak at things like I was doing all these things, and then it was, I think, year four that I, even though my business was building up and I was feeling more financially secure and I felt like, the business was growing, I kind of hit a roadblock. And it was a couple of years where we didn't have the financial services success that we'd had previously. I got a phone call telling me I was no longer being looked at for leadership. There were no more calls to speak. It was just kind of crickets. And that at the time, and part of that was during COVID too, so I probably didn't feel it as, that's not an excuse at all, by the way. I mean, whatever. But anyway, so there was a few years there where it was just kind of like plugging along. Business is still growing, but not doing what I had done in the beginning. And I finally, I think it was the end of 2021, I was like, this just isn't good enough. Like, what, this, I don't like, I don't have any ego, but I do, I do like being involved in decision making. Like, I do like being asked. I know I'm good at this, right? And I was just like, this just isn't good enough. So, and at the same time, this person came into my life that I hired, who really kind of changed my life, my outlook, and how to talk to people about financial conversations. And so we did. We went from essentially nothing financial services wise to hitting our level three travel that next year, and being in, chairman circle, and the kind of, the things that put you in the top percentage of agencies again. So I'm back in, I'm into year three of kind of my back, being back is kind of how I call it, just kind of back to where we really should be. Because at the end of the day, I have a nonprofit heart. It's not, it's more, when I had those couple of years where we weren't really having a lot of success in the, at least in financial services, I was not doing the job, like, I don't have a boss ticking off my, yes, you've done this, and this, so you can have your raise. So that's harder. You have to self-motivate, but it really isn't the job that I was entrusted with. So,
Oh,
luckily I,
the self-motivation thing is so interesting too, because I think we want something, right? And we see other people doing the thing that we want, and we think that we're doing all the things, but in reality, maybe we're not. In reality, we're not taking the action. And, maybe we're sitting back and we're like, oh, poor, woe is me. Why don't I have this thing like they have? Instead of kind of self-reflecting and go, okay, well, what do I need to do? What action do I need to take to get there? Because, that happens. I mean, I'm guilty of that. I think the second year, I think in coaching, I feel like it was supposed to work in a year and it's not working. Right. And now I'm going to be sad. You know what I mean? Instead of actually just putting my head down and doing what I needed to do, I was shoving myself in more education, and not necessarily education that was helping me, but education I kind of already knew. Mm-hmm. That was just like slapping more validation for what I already knew. And in my mind, building confidence, when in actuality, it was doing nothing. Nothing.
Yeah.
It was procrastinating.
Oh, procrastinate. Well, filling your schedule, because I see it with some of my colleagues, you filling your schedule with things like that. So you feel busy. You're like, I'm busy. So I'm doing the work, I'm busy, you know, but you're not, like you said, doing the things that are actually moving your business forward. You're just filling your schedule so you feel like you're busy and successful. And
I was going to say it's a false sense of, you know, moving forward when in actuality, you're just sitting in your car with your car turned on. You know, you got to actually press the gas. You got to actually move the steering wheel, you know?
Analogy.
You said something earlier about you were getting all these accolades, mm-hmm. but the financial success wasn't necessarily there. And this is another thing that I think so many of us think of success as how much is in our bank account or what our mm-hmm. paychecks look like, or, you know, we measure success based around money. Mm-hmm. This is a tough one for a lot of people, and this is something I've worked through the last 3 years, because I did go from a very successful hair business to making mm-hmm. nothing the first year, like literally not like nothing. And I felt like I had no purpose, and I was mm-hmm. tying my money beliefs and my financial successes to my self-worth. You feel like that you have done that, or do you feel like that was kind of not necessarily part of your journey?
You know, that's hard to say. I think that, yes, I definitely was not prepared for, you know, everyone says when you start a business, you make no money, but you think, oh, that they mean that's like not, just not that much money, right? Like, yeah, I was in the same boat, like literally nothing, like zero paycheck, nothing for a year. Yeah. Definitely felt a bit like I was failing my family, for sure. I mean, you know, I knew that it would be tough in the beginning. It's always harder than you think it's going to be. I mean, now I had something that a little bit different that kept me motivated was, you know, I have employees, so I'm feeling responsibility to them too, right? Like, I got to make this thing go because this is the money they're using to help support their families. And I need to keep doing better so I can offer them more and give them the opportunity to grow and be better, you know? So that kept me probably more motivated when I was feeling like, you know, this really sucks, you know, zero money the first year, $15,000, like, you know, that definitely help, but I did. I felt like I was failing my family for sure.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you feel like pressure helped you succeed?
Yes. 1,000,000%. If I hadn't, I was so resentful that first year of those every 2 week checkpoints, and those hard conversations, like extremely resentful that first year. But when I look at what it pushed me to do, like I would no way be having any of the success I have now if I hadn't succumbed to the pressure like that first year and done exactly, you know, when you've got, you know, I know my situation is a little bit different than somebody starting a business from scratch, but still, you know, don't recreate the wheel. Like, it doesn't matter what your business is. And for us, it was when a company that's been around for 100 years is giving you a blueprint for success, don't shoot yourself in the foot and say, I can do it better, I wouldn't do it that way. Like, I think that's what I really did right, was just follow the blueprint. And that's where I did fall off those couple of years mm-hmm. when I wasn't doing necessarily all of the things that were going to move the business forward and make it successful. I kind of veered off that path, and it just wasn't wasn't the right thing. So, definitely, and I think that can be useful in any business. Like, don't recreate the wheel. Like, use other people's successes and failures and incorporate it into your own business instead of making it harder for yourself, you know?
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm so glad that you brought this up because this is like a perfect example with like what coaching helps with. Like I know I wouldn't even have started my coaching business if I did not have a coach. Period. Like, you know what I mean? Like one, like you are gonna have hard days. You are gonna have days where you don't know what the fuck you're doing. And you're gonna have days that you don't wanna do what is required. And you need somebody sometimes to go, no, if you want this bad enough, you do have to do X, Y, and Z. And I have fought back. You know, I've had the same coach now for a couple years, and I have fought back on things she has said numerous times. And guess what I'm doing now? What she said. You know? And it's like, and it's so interesting because having those people that hold you accountable, that can give you a different perspective because you walk into starting a business, whatever kind of business and whatever that looks like, with your own beliefs, right? Beliefs based around the life that you used to live, and you're trying to create a different life. So you have to let go of the old beliefs to create the new life with the new beliefs. And I don't think people think about that. I think people
So
think,
hard.
I got this. I don't need help. You know, there's so much like independent woman thing. You can still ask for help. I think there's strength in asking for help because this whole I can do it all by myself thing is not going to get you far. I mean, sure, you can succeed, but it's going to take you longer. Speaking of that, you mentioned earlier about building your network. I want to talk about this because I'm a huge advocate for collaboration. I'm a huge advocate for community, meeting people. I think a lot of times people hear like networking and they kind of get this like, I'm going to go in this like office building and everyone's in suits and we're going to shake hands and have like name tags. You know what I mean? But networking is really making friends, making
1,000,000,000
friends that are
percent.
doing things that like you're interested in. And then maybe one day you can help each other.
1,000,000,000 percent. I networked at a Easter party yesterday.
Right.
Like legit adult go hunt for eggs Easter party. So yeah, for real.
So, how has networking helped you build your business?
So two things I think oh, I just thought of something else that was important to say too.
Go for it.
So in the beginning when I had put together a list, we called it a hot list. It was like 150 people that I had worked with or asked for money or sat in my boards or whatever it was that would be like open to a conversation. And I really thought that all of those people were going to jump on board with me like that first year. Like I really thought that. I thought, you know, if I'm price competitive, whatever it is, you know, it is insurance, but you know, they're all gonna hop on with me. And I'll tell you what, I'm still 8.5 years later, I'm still working that hot list. Like, even my parents, this is a true story, didn't hop on board with me for like a year because they were it's just yeah. So that list was like super important, but it is really good to know that no matter how close you feel like you are with people, or you know, friendship and business doesn't always mix, or it doesn't mix right away. Like it never occurred to me that as close as some of these people were to me, they would still want to wait and make sure I was hanging in there before they were gonna move their all their financials. So, you know, it makes total sense now, but at the time, you know, I was it stung that it didn't happen more quickly. But again, like I said, you know, I'm so grateful it didn't, because 8.5 years in, I still need to write business and I'm still working that list and it's still helping my business grow. And so, you know, I'm grateful for that. But networking, it's been invaluable. So there, and it's, you know, you're going to network, you're going to meet hundreds of people, and you're going to think, oh, they're all going to send me business. And they definitely don't all send you business. But over time, just like your business building, those relationships build. And so maybe this person refers me to someone one time ever, but that one person has referred me to 10 people, you know. So, and it is really easy. Like during those couple of years I was talking about where things were kind of stodgy in my business, I was doing a lot less of that. Like I was just, let me go out to happy hour with my girlfriends instead. Let me do whatever just feels good and makes me happy. And so I was doing a lot less of that. And it definitely affected my success. So finding, and also people in the industry, that it's hard to find other, unfortunately, it's sometimes hard to find other women that just truly want to cheerlead for you. That there's no jealousy, there's no animosity, there's no competition. It's just true friendship, camaraderie, you know, sharing ideas. And so I've been extremely fortunate to find my little group of those women in my own industry that were able to do that for each other. Just feel like, you know, genuinely happy for each other, get ideas from, and but it is hard. It's hard. We're in sales, you know, everybody's competitive. So, you know, it's that is crucial. Does that answer what you're asking me?
Absolutely. I could not agree more. I mean, I travel at this point all over the world now to meet and be in rooms with people that cheer me on. You know, and it's interesting too, because I didn't set out to network. I just really like people. Like I want to make friends. Like and I will be your biggest fan if you let me. Like it's kind of ridiculous. Like
No, you will. That's true.
I absolutely will. And it's funny because there is kind of this narrative that like women don't want to support other women, and I don't think that's true. I think you're talking to the wrong women. For anyone who's listening, you can find these
100%.
people. Sometimes you have to pay to be in the room to find the people. I have paid thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to find some of the people that are now some of my best friends, you know, and they all live around the US. Gosh, I have some in the UK. So it's like to be able to be back in the room with them costs money. But they're my friends regardless.
Well, and to that point, it's crucial because it is really easy sometimes to, because you have a finite amount of time, and you want to spend time with people that make you feel good, but you also have you want to surround yourself with people who are equally motivated and, you know, equally, you are the company you keep sometimes. And so, and I've got lots of friends that I love that I would like to spend more time with, you know, but I try to surround myself with people that I, you know, I enjoy their company, and we're also making each other better. And so it's really easy to fall into a woe is me group. You know, it's really easy to decide, you know, let's just get together and complain about what we didn't get, what wasn't fair, you know, like what we couldn't control, you know, all of these things. And so that was a big turnaround for me too, as I kind of brought my business back around, was remembering that and getting back in with the people that, you know, make me better and the people that I want to be in a great way, you know, in a great way. Like we want to be at the same meetings. We want to be in Hawaii together. We want to be at Chairman Circle meeting together. Like, you know, I might not be paying necessarily to go to those things, but the amount of work I've had to do to get there, it's kind of the same thing.
I was
Those
going
are
to say,
the,
time is still money.
yes. Well, yes. And making the investment in the business to get there, like those are the people that I want to be around that make me better. So definitely, that's huge.
Yeah, that has been something I've really dived into the last year of like walking away from certain conversations and kind of assessing how I feel. Because what I've realized is sometimes when I'm in a conversation where somebody just wants their negative emotions to be validated, I walk away feeling very low vibe and very complainy and very like not great. But when I have conversations that are like, hey, like, you know, we're uplifting each other, like, I walk away feeling awesome. And it's kind of to the point where like I just have to pick and choose when I want to do those. That like, you know what I mean? Like sometimes it's just not even worth going if right. it's if I'm going to walk away and just feel you know, because sometimes that feeling can last way longer than the conversation.
Totally. And it's so easy. It's so easy to fall into that because misery loves company and it's so intoxicating sometimes. Like you just, it feels so good to complain.
Yeah, it
does. You don't have to take any accountability and it's easy. You know, it's lazy and it just, sometimes it feels good, but it does nothing but bite you in the ass. You know, it feels good for a minute and it's all the things we teach our kids, right? Like it feels good for, and now you're not allowed to, see your friends for a week. That wasn't worth it, was it? You know, right. it's all the same lessons we're always trying to teach young people. It can be very easy to fall into that and just gotta resist it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now I have a question for you because I have seen you in action. So for the listeners, Erin will go to happy hour and he will meet somebody. We'll be talking. This has happened. This is a true story. And she will meet somebody and she'll have a little conversation with them, very personable. And then she'll be like, so do you have life insurance? And you will sell yourself. Not in a sleazy, I'm salesperson that people think kind, car salesman kind of way, but very much in a, I'm proud of what I do. I know I'm good at what I do and I can help you. Yeah. And I think that a lot of times people start a business because they have a passion. They want to impact. They want to help people. But they really, really struggle with talking about the impact that they can actually make. Is this something that comes naturally to you or did you have to learn this?
That's a really good question. I don't think, you know, I am very personable and I do love making friends, but that didn't necessarily come naturally to me. I think my fundraising really helped me figure out how to do that because, you know, that's swallow your pride is like not even, I don't even know how to say it. You know, you are asking people for money just simply for the tax write-off, I guess, and the feel good.
Right.
So fundraisers are salespeople who don't make commission, which, you know, is what you couldn't describe it better. So I think that's probably where I learned some of those skills. But now, you know, especially in the past couple of years, having had some death claims, having seen what happens to families when there is no cushion, all those GoFundMe accounts on Facebook, I'm like, you know what? What's the worst that can happen? They say, I don't need it, or I already have it, or you know what? You're right.
You're good. She keeps losing her ear.
I have like a bad earbud. Am I still here?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay. You know, I'm like, this sounds so cheesy, but I'm so lucky to be doing what I do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just don't have any fear anymore. I mean, that's the difference. You know, for the longest time, there's fear and I just don't have it anymore. I'm like, this is the right thing for your family. Like whether or not you believe that, that's up to you. But, you know, you're not going to do this with anybody who cares more than me or who is more qualified than I am to help you. So I'm just going to go for it. And if you don't want to take me up on it, that's up to you. I'll move on to the next person, you know, but this is what I'm supposed to be doing, you know? And so I just don't, the fear is gone, but it took a long time. It was probably just in the past year that I really felt as fearless as I do now. And, you know, this person that I talked about who's really helped me learn how to have these conversations, I mean, that's what's helped me the most. And this is your family. I mean, this is the financial help. This is the difference between generational wealth and generational poverty in a lot of situations. Yeah. So I just can't have fear. And so I just don't. Well, but it took a while.
It took practice, I'm sure. And a lot of times the fear comes from our ego. You know, you mentioned the ego earlier. And, you know, the fear comes from what are people going to think if I –
right.
You know, ask them if they want my services. Like, I don't know. It's like, it's, when you say it out loud and out of your own head, it feels ridiculous. Yeah.
Right. You know? Right. It does. But what you, I mean, it's that's what I tell myself in my head. Like, no, you're not going to do this with anybody else who cares more than me or who has your best interest in mind more than I do. Yeah. So if I don't ask you, someone else will, who maybe doesn't have your best interests at heart. So it's my responsibility.
Mm, I love that. I love that. Your confidence in your passion for what you do is very evident. And I think it's really amazing. And I've always loved watching you, even though I joke you about it all the time because it's fun for me. Ask them if they have life insurance.
Which I love, though. And you've always been like a huge – you were with me from the beginning. So you've always been a huge cheerleader for me. So I'm so grateful for you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I have one more question before we wrap up. What does success mean to you, Erin?
Ooh. you know, I think it's, you know, am I serving people the way that I've been entrusted to? Do I feel good about it? Do I feel, you know, there's so many days that are hard. And there's so many days that feel amazing, but at the end of the day, you know, if my customers are being served, if my family is happy, if I can pay my bills, if I can take some vacations, if I know I'll be able to retire at some point and I'm not living in any debt, I mean, that's, to me, that's success. I don't have to live in a $1 million home. I don't need to drive brand new car. Like, that's really not important. So I think it's, getting down to your core values and what truly makes you happy and is your family taken care of. And again, most importantly, because of the trust relationship in my situation that I have with my company, like, am I taking care of their customers the way that they've asked me to? So, and right now I feel really great about it. So yeah, to me, that's success.
I love it. I love it. Erin, keep kicking ass. And your hair looks great, by the way.
Well, thanks to you.
Thank you so much for coming on and talking about starting messy. This is such an exciting pivot for me. And you are one of the first people that I wanted to have on this new podcast. I keep just calling it a pivot. I feel like I say pivot a million times. So thank you so much for coming and sharing your story with everybody. I would give everybody your Instagram handle, but you don't do Instagram for your business, which, good for you.
I need to.
It's a whole nother episode.
Yeah. That's next.
Thank you so much, Erin.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Once again, thank you so much for listening to the Starting Messy podcast. I hope that this inspires you to get out of your own way and start messy. If you like what you heard, please share it, leave a review, and tag us on social media. I'll talk with you on the next one.